is Mishmash, a weekly conversation where we try to unjumble an important and sometimes under-the-radar statewide story that affects you. I'm Shayna Roth. Hate crimes are up all across the U.S., including in Michigan. In fact, Michigan is now ranked fourth in the nation for white nationalist incidents. That's according to a recent Anti-Defamation League report. Here with me to break it down is Crystal Nurse, the diversity and inclusion reporter for the Lansing State Journal. Crystal, welcome to Mishmash.
Hi, thank you so much, Shane. I really appreciate it.
So this report is really concerning. Walk us through the trends that we've been seeing in white nationalism, both nationally and at home.
So nationally, we've seen white nationalism in different forms. So it can be the traditional means of us seeing the KKK, which actually it's going strong in pockets of the U.S. It's not as strong as it was in the 20th century, but it has evolved, meaning that it looks different today than it does beforehand. It looks such as groups like Patriot Front, Goyim Defense League, and also the White Lives Matter movement. Those are all different factions of white nationalism that the ADL attributed as being more so the drivers of this. Mostly what people will think to see white nationalism in current day is during the massive quote-unquote protests that happened in Charlottesville, where one woman was killed. That was a big point of white nationalism where people started to click that, like, wait a second, this is actually still going on in our country, and it's dangerous. And obviously, many people have pushed for the federal government to call them as domestic terrorists just because of the fact that they do exist in order for a way to say our race as white people are being affected and we are being decimated and we need to do something to take back the country. Here in Michigan, we've seen a very very strange way of how white nationalism has come up. Just to put it into context, Michigan was one of the places where the KKK was growing massively but quietly. And so what I mean that is that the grand dragon of the KKK in Michigan, Bob Miles, he was located out in Howell. And when we talk about that KKK, in historical documents, I found that the leader of the KKK in the South called the Michigan KKK the strongest one outside the South. And when you hear that, you start to think about like how that has seeped through state politics and just the state in general, because everyone, not everyone, but people of all walks of life were in the KKK, but their membership was very much hidden for reasons that we shouldn't have to say, but they were hidden just so that way people wouldn't notice that they're a Klan member. And with that, it allowed for other sort of hate groups, like I said before, Patriot Front, Goyim Defense League, and White Lives Matter to be born out of this. And what the ADL League found is that Michigan, Texas, Massachusetts, and Virginia were the top four states ranked with white nationalist events happening. That can be banner drops, rallies, or any sort of like placards that they're just throwing around. But in Michigan, white nationalists targeted the state 355 times last year, which is up 132% from the previous year, which means that it's quite a bit of a concern when you're talking about white nationalism in the state. And also, like I said earlier, we had the KKK here. So that means that there's some sort of like seeps that go on as to like where it is.
What has been the reaction to this report? And are there really any plans to try and combat this problem?
Yeah, so I did try to reach out to the Attorney General's office, the Governor's office, and also the Michigan State Police to hear a bit more as to how they plan to address this. Unfortunately, I did not hear back, but I have been keeping an eye on the state police's annual incident crime reporting logs, which they release. I believe they do it every fall for the previous year. And in the 2021 report, it stated that white people made up 52.3% of the offender's race, and that also race served as a leading motivation factor in bias crimes at 57.1%. We do know that in Michigan, there are sorts of prosecutions going on when it comes to white nationalism, where last year, Washtenaw County, they sentenced several people who were memberships of this group called the base. And if people hear the base, they probably think they do know what happened, but it's where they targeted, in a very weird mistaken identity case, where they targeted a Black Dexter family's home, and they ran a hate camp in the state. And a lot of the targets, I believe they were targeting them with a lot of hate pamphlets, and they did some other sorts of actions to this Black family's home. And ever since then, the Washtenaw County judge has been issuing many sorts of sanctions, and also Attorney General Dina Nessel's office has been issuing a lot of press advisories, press alerts, and whatnot when it comes to what's happened with that sort of incident that happened in 2019.
Let's dig into the report a little bit and break down some of the information. What is considered an incident?
So an incident is really defined as a crime. So it's anything that happens in the scope of Michigan's criminal code. And so when it comes to hate and bias, especially last year, it got redefined and also was redefined again earlier this year through legislative action, was that anyone is considered to be committing a hate crime if you are intentionally attacking someone and trying to elicit harm and to intimidate them for perceptions or even beliefs of someone's race, sexual orientation, religion, gender, disability, and any other protected classes that fall within the the Elliot Larson Civil Rights Act. And I just want to correct myself. It also includes mental and physical disabilities. And last year, it added the whole sexual orientation and gender into it. So that way, people who are identify as trans, or they are non-binary, or they feel as though they're being targeted because of their LGBTQ identity, that adds that protection in for them through the state Supreme Court action that was handed down, I believe, either at the end of June or the beginning of July, and was also reaffirmed through a bill that Governor Whitmer signed in February.
Michigan is ranked fourth. Is it possible that one of the reasons for it being ranked so high is that it has a diverse population? Because I wonder if very white states where there's not a lot of people of color or, you know, diverse people, but might have a lot of white nationalists there, but there's not a lot of people for them to confront for there to be incidents. Is that sort of factored into the reporting at all?
So the ADLE didn't tell me as to what's motivating the reason behind why Michigan was ranked. I mean, the states I listed before, Texas, Massachusetts, and Virginia, they're very diverse. Massachusetts is a little bit of an anomaly. I mean, as though it's not very diverse unless you get to the Boston area. But Texas is extremely diverse for reasons more obvious than not. It has a very high Hispanic population, and Virginia, it's a weird state in that it borders the South, but it's still in the mid-Atlantic region. And so it gets a lot of people that are living in Maryland or living in DC or what have you. And it has a very healthy mix of people. And so it does beg the question as to why are states with higher populations of people of color being targeted when it comes to these white nationalist events? And to me, I would think, obviously, that is the reason why. However, it's not told as to like whether or not this is big. I know white nationalists, they're still big in places like Oregon. Like, we've seen many white nationalist events happen up in Oregon, and Oregon is not exactly a diverse state. So I'm not sure if they're targeting states because of their diversity, or if they're targeting states so that way they can recruit other people that can sound and look like them and be like them to basically spread as to where they are.
So according to the organization's heat map, East Lansing, Ann Arbor, Detroit, Flint, Kalamazoo, Portage, and Royal Oak were some of the most targeted cities by the Patriot Front, which is one of those white nationalist groups, along with Goyam Defense League, White Lives Matter, and Folkish Resistance Movement. There was also a lot of activity on Michigan college and university campuses. What do you make of where these incidents are taking place?
They're targeting some very populated areas, and also areas that are very young. They want to attract young people. They want to get young people on board Because obviously, with any group and with any ideology, if you get young people on board, your idea is good. You can sell it. You can get anyone in because young people, as we've seen through protests of any kind, they're very passionate. But East Lansing and Ann Arbor, they are extremely high with the college population. Not to say it's easy to persuade college students, but once you get them on board, they are very much passionate about what they believe in. And it could also attract more students that you may have not been able to attract in traditional ways. And so for them to target these areas that have young populations is also concerning because the fact that these are people that are voting age. And if you're a hate group and you are attracting people who are voting ages, you may be able to persuade them to vote for a certain ballot question or even a person who fits their ideological views. And now you have this representation in state government, and now you have these laws passed, and now people of color and LGBTQ people are now being put at attack because of the fact that there are more white nationalists being put in government and in our laws and in our systems. And that's how this whole systemic racism gets purported. People support these people, these rules, these laws and whatnot, so that way they can be propped up and they could put people of color and anyone else who is not white down below and below them, so that way they can, quote unquote, stop the replacement of white people.
You had another piece recently in the Lansing State Journal. State police are now tracking incidents of bias against police officers in Michigan. What's going on here?
So this one came out of pure curiosity because I like to keep myself abreast of what's going on with hate crimes just in my beat of diversity and inclusion. And when I was doing that, I was also trying to see what else is going on with white nationalism. I saw a little category that was just placed there. It was very small in the 2020 report where it says anti-law enforcement, and then it had 10 crimes there listed. So I was like, okay, that's strange. And then I saw in 2021's report, they had 148 crimes. But the real issue is that when the state police is describing to people about these crimes and about the impact in Michigan, it was the second highest bias motivation ranked bi bias motivation ranked crime behind race, which serves as an issue to many because then people are thinking, well, are people being charged with an anti-law enforcement crime? No, they aren't, because Michigan is actually the only state out of five that already count that already track anti-police incidents as hate crimes to do this without any sort of criminal statute. Louisiana, Kentucky, Mississippi, and Texas have both passed laws, and their governors have signed it into their state codes that say if you willingly, if not, if you knowingly or perceived to have attacked someone because of their job as a law enforcement agent, an EMT, or firefighter, you are charged with a hate crime. Michigan doesn't have that. And so it begs the question as to why are they tracking this? If people can't be charged, they can't be prosecuted for this, and there's no real rhyme or reason why you're doing this. State police have told me that they are doing this so that they can further figure out what's behind a crime. How are crimes committed? Why is this being done? Critics, however, say you can do that, but not under the guise of hate crimes, because you obviously already have in your reports, when you commit a crime against police, there are other crimes such as evading arrest, beating up a police officer, so many other crimes that some would say are anti-police that state police could look at already and piece together in a completely different category to figure out, okay, what's happening? Why are people, I don't know, if say like evading arrest is up in Michigan, the state police go there and be like, what's happening right there? What can we do to make sure that people don't evade arrest? How can we stop this? If people are evading arrest, are we continuing on with high speed police pursuits and all that other sort of stuff? But when it comes to hate crimes, you're solving a problem that doesn't exist. And when I do talk about the four states that have passed these laws all came during a time when the so-called Blue Lives Matter group, when they started to gain traction throughout the country, and many states have tried this, including Michigan, to pass laws to protect people in their jobs as police officers. They were colloquially called Blue Lives Matter laws. It was introduced by a politician from Commerce Township, Clint Kesko, Republican. He introduced it so that way he could figure out more so like what is in this crime, how are these crimes happening, what's the trend of these crimes. However, when he did tell me that when he introduced the bill, it wasn't to classify everything as a hate crime when you say beat up a police officer or whatnot. Now, when you're doing this, it also begs the question, if you're at a protest and say it's a Black Lives Matter protest, you're at that protest and people are screaming expletives against police, is that a hate crime? Are you being charged with a hate crime against police? Where do you fall in that statistics? And so when the state police is tracking this, you kind of like start to question why. You say that, not you, state police says that it's done to further understand crimes against police. Why can't you look at that through any other means, forms, or fashions?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the initial reaction to this from a large group of people would be, hey, actually, the police should be tracking their own internal bias instead of this sort of external bias that may or may not be happening against them. What has the reaction to this new change been?
It's been very, a lot of, I posted this article on Reddit. I browse Reddit regardless, just for fun. I posted this to the Michigan subreddit, and many of the reactions I actually cannot state because a lot of them included expletives. But in it, a lot of people did point out, like, what is it, like what you said earlier, why is it that they are tracking these crimes against police as hate crimes and not looking internally to see what are police doing that are perceived to be hate crimes for other people, such as if a police officer is targeting a Black community unjustly, why aren't they looking at that as a hate crime? Why aren't they looking at their own implicit or internal biases against people as hate crimes? Why are they doing this in this sort of fashion that sort of just dilutes the reason why we have hate crimes? I mean, we were talking about white nationalism earlier in the KKK. The KKK really stood, unfortunately, as a great example as to why we have hate crime laws. Because people are trying to target people, whether it's through intimidation, through murders, through any sort of shootings, or any sort of other tactics that make people think and believe, I shouldn't be here, and I should no longer exist because of the fact that this one person of a certain group is targeting me, and I can't live here, and they're intimidating me, and now it's sort of trumping over your constitutional rights. And so when we talk about police and police tracking anti-police crimes as hate crimes, what's the sort of constitutional rights and laws that they have when it comes to being a police officer? It's not in a federal code. You can't, your vocation cannot be considered a protected class because you can change your vocation. You can't change your race. You can't change who you are or what your religion is. You can't change your disability. Your protected class is based on stuff that you can't change. People may hear that and think, well, there are people who are trans, but when you're a trans or non-binary, you know that for the rest of your life. You know that since the beginning of your life of who you are. And when people go through gender, when they go through surgery or take hormonal stuff so that way they can align with the gender that they have lived with and they believe that they are, that's not changing it. That's affirming to their gender identity.
Before we head out, I wanted to ask you about a very long and late meeting that you were at earlier this week involving red tagging in Lansing. Break down for us what happened.
So at that meeting, it was a 4-hour meeting that City Council hastily called. I believe they requested the meeting to happen 1 or 2 business days beforehand. But that meeting started because of the fact that there was one property in Lansing. It's called Holmes Apartments. It's right off of Holmes Streets in South Lansing. It's owned by Simtob Management. And throughout the property, I visited the property a couple of weeks ago and then also had my photographer come by. And the conditions were abhorrent. There was a roof that was off of the top of the building, and nearly the entire roof was actually gone. Simtob later told me that happened because of a massive windstorm that came by in January, which we all know knocked out power for quite some time, unfortunately, for those in the southeast part of the state for about a bit longer. But this windstorm was so severe to this property to where the roof came off, and Simtop tried to get some contractors to come in and replace it. They hit a lot of roadblocks along the way due to it being winter and trying to get people in on time. However, while they were hitting those roadblocks, it was still raining and it was still precipitating in Lansing. And unfortunately, with that happening, properties on the top third floor were getting hit with rain into their apartments. Then it seeped further into the second floor and then into the ground third floor part of the apartment building. And to the point where people have mold growing in their apartments. There's black mold. There were apartments that I visited where people had to actually put clothes so they can't see their neighbor above them. Like, quite literally, they saw their neighbors above them. And one woman, she had to move. She lives in a two-bedroom apartment with her daughter, and they now, well, not now, but prior to being moved, they were living together in one bedroom, and her daughter has a disability, and there's a gaping hole in her bedroom, and it smells of mildew now. And so many other places where, like, the ceiling lamp would have water just sitting in it because of the fact that rain just kept coming through, snow, melted snow kept coming through and sitting there, to the point where they were banging their doors asking for something to be done. And city code enforcement went out on March 22nd and just red tagged the entire building and all the units. Unfortunately, due to Lansing's laws, if you live in a property that's red tagged, you have to move out by 5 p.m. that day. You can't, when it's red tagged, it means it's unsafe and it's dangerous to live in. And with that, everybody had to move out. Granted, these people, it's not an affordable housing complex. The rents cost around like somewhere between $600 to $800 a month. Some people are on Section 8, but they also didn't have any place to go because they don't have a method of transportation. A lot of them live there because it's a great, cheap place to live. Well, when people were moved out, they were moved to some properties, which was on 1317 East Kalamazoo Street. I forgot the name of the apartment building, but some of those units were pink tag, which means they lack valid rental certificates or they aren't up to code compliance. And with that, they were then later moved to hotels that the city is paying for now because the fact that the management company has so grossly managed the situation to the point where they moved from one bad apartment to another. And now they're in a hotel, which is not, no one wants to live in a hotel. And now they're living there, and the city has filed a lawsuit against Simtop. And with all that happening, the city's like, well, wait a second. What's happening elsewhere in the city? Where else do we have red tags? What's going on? Like, why is this so severe? And unfortunately, which was a very bad surprise to find out, the city's code enforcement department has just been not ran well. What they, the new, I guess I would call her the interim head, Barb Kimmel, of code enforcement. Apparently, they've had the BSNA software, which tracks properties. You can do permits. You can pay for late water bills. And you can look at your property's red tag or pink tag status. Apparently, not a single person has been trained well enough to parse data, to query data, to pull data, or anything like that in the entire software in the 20 years that they've had it. Among many other things, they didn't have reliable ways of knowing if someone has actually updated their property to fit the standards. The inspections were going left and right. They don't know like if an inspection was happening a month later or 3 months later or what have you. And many residents also showed up to that meeting too, to let the city know how bad it is. And there's another apartment complex in Lansing, Autumn Ridge, of where people are facing the same exact issue. This meeting, there wasn't a real result except the fact that Council President Carol Wood has told them that they will be having regular meetings to the point where code enforcement needs to keep them abreast of what's going on. They need to tell them, what are you doing? Let us know. We need weekly, monthly, however it is, we're gonna try and demand for you to give us these updates so that we can know what's going on, is that nothing can fall through the cracks anymore of this again. Like Carol Wood said, that the reason why the city is in this shape that it is right now is due to everyone's negligence, whether it's city council, the change of mayors, mayor's administrations, code enforcement, and everyone else. Everyone's doing fault of this. And there needs to be something to be done to stop whatever it is that was happening in the past and fix everything up so that way we can put ourselves over to a newer leaf. Kimmel did say in the meeting that she's looking to get a consultant to thoroughly review and audit code enforcement to see what policies need to be changed, what different sorts of procedures they need to be put in place, what software do they need to review, what are their fees looking like, how can they lengthen the penalties, how can they make something more severe, how can they make it less severe, and also just how can they do these things to the point where the tenants aren't being held responsible for their landlord having an unsafe and dangerous living condition.
Crystal Nurse is an amazing diversity and inclusion reporter. You can find her excellent reporting in the Lansing State Journal. Crystal, thank you so much for joining us here today on Mishmash.
Thank you, Shana. It was great being on here.
Mishmash is produced by WDET, Detroit's NPR station. This episode was produced by myself, Shana Roth, and Hearns Laguerre Jr. Our news director is Jerome Vaughn, and our podcast manager is David Lyons. Our digital team is Dave Kim and Sophia Joswiak, and our podcast interns are Ashley Harris, Patrick Burness, and Jack Philbrand. As always, if you listen to this podcast and you want to support it, and we really hope you do, you can do so by leaving us a review, or you can also support WDET by going to wdet.org/give. Everything that you give is really vital to helping WDET support programs like this one. Again, that's wdet.org/give. We'll talk to you next week.